to On Demand with Jenna Ellis. This is our AFR exclusive podcast where we get to do a little bit deeper dive into the issues that you care about and the questions, hopefully answer the questions that you have with guests that you love to hear from. And today we're talking about Congress and codifying some of Donald Trump's wins and the things that truly will make America great again. And I am so pleased that we have Representative Chip Roy from the great state of Texas joining me this morning for this conversation. So good morning, Congressman, and thanks for being here on Demand.
Good morning, Jenna. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. And, you know, I was reading your op-ed that was published this week along with a couple of other representatives in Fox News. And the headline is, "We're members of the House Freedom Caucus. The U.S. must choose either $20 trillion in debt or Medicaid reform. Medicaid spending has spiked over $200 billion in 5 years. That's an insane amount. Reform needs to be the centerpiece of DOGE cuts." So let's start there.
Well, this is a really critically important question. And it's really hard to not, you know, get really deep diving into the numbers in a way that will make people's eyes glaze over. But everyone has to take a step back and realize that pre-COVID in 2019, we were spending about $4.5 trillion total. Then now we're spending about $7 trillion total. And so what that means is we've had a rapid, you know, expansion in overall government spending. So you have to look at where that's coming from. And I'm not going to go through all of the, you know, various, every single amount of the expenditures, but clearly that's been driven a lot by Medicare, by Social Security, but also interest on the debt. But one that most Americans don't realize has exploded under Joe Biden and in the wake of Obamacare is Medicaid spending. And a huge chunk of that is going to what we call improper payments, which means the wrong amount of money is going out, and it's going to the wrong people often. And importantly, it's going to often illegals and people who are able-bodied as opposed to the most vulnerable among us. So when you add all that up, you've got an enormous amount of spending going out on the back of Obamacare. And another important piece to it is that Obamacare expansion, right, all of that population in Medicaid, that is being funded by the feds at a 90% rate. That is higher than what we normally give under Medicaid to the original targeted population of the most vulnerable, right? The sick, the disabled, single moms, that sort of thing. And so now we're paying out at a higher rate. So states like California basically game the system. They put a lot of able-bodied, illegal aliens, whatever they can into the system, they ratchet up their amounts, send the bill to the feds, get a 90% return on that, and then they use that to plus up their own general budget and perpetuate the expansion of Medicaid, such that California now gets more in the Medicaid dollars alone than Florida's entire budget. That's a true story. There's
insane.
A scam going on, Jenna. Now, I just covered a lot of stuff. And if you cut to the chase in the op-ed, what we're saying is we must deal with reforming Medicaid in this reconciliation package that's sitting in front of us, or we'll never get our arms around it. And it's a program that is not just racking up debt. It's an inefficient, ineffective program that's driving up the cost of health care for every American, and it's saddling more and more millions of Americans as dependents on the state, purposeful by this Marxist and the statists, and we got to stop it.
Yeah, and it just seems like this reckless spending, not just in Medicaid, but even how President Trump mentioned millions of Social Security payments going to people, you know, over 120 years old. I mean, you know, clearly payments that shouldn't be made, and then all of this bloat to USAID. I mean, there is so much that is going out of the federal government. I mean, we knew that the debt was just racking up more and more and more. But to actually see in real time where these payments are going, I mean, it's beyond frivolous. It's actually a lack of good stewardship. It's reckless at best. And so, you know, where the rubber meets the road here, though, is, you know, DOGE can offer solutions and can advise, But is it really up to Congress, or I guess how much is really up to Congress in terms of making some of these changes when you're seeing some of the litigation against some of Trump's executive orders to say, well, no, he doesn't have the authority to do that. It has to go through Congress.
So there's a lot to go through there, too. Here's the basic gist. If let's take it kind of in pieces. We just passed the discretionary six-month funding bill, which I'm happy to talk about in a minute if you want, the so-called continuing resolution. But put, sort of put that on the side, right? That's discretionary spending. That's the roughly 27 or 28% of the budget that we control every 2 years in our discretionary votes, okay? Then you've got the rest of the stuff, all the mandatory. And we're dealing with a lot of that in the reconciliation process, although we're not legally allowed to deal with Social Security under the reconciliation process. And Medicare, you know, the president is largely taken off the table, and you can't deal with interest. So you're really just dealing with Medicaid and food stamps. All right, that's the overall landscape. Within all of the various programs, both mandatory and discretionary, there's all of this waste, fraud, and abuse, stupid programs, stupid spending, overspending, bad contracts, bad management. DOGE is zeroing in a lot on that, right? Like, where is the stupid? And they go identify the stupid, the duplicate Social Security numbers, the ridiculous, you know, contracts, you know, empty buildings, people that are duplicate jobs, that kind of stuff. So they identify that and they kick it up. Overlay over all of that are the powers of the president and what the president can do. The president can do what's called impoundment, which is, hey, we don't need to use all of these dollars necessarily. I can do my job without using them all. For example, he's the commander-in-chief. Maybe we appropriated for overseas wars. The president goes, hey, we don't need to be involved with as many wars. So maybe I can save, you know, $25 billion and then put that aside, impound it, or reprogram it. That's another tool. What else can they do? Rescissions, which means literally rescind the spending. There is some executive power, we believe, to do that, perhaps unilaterally. But they can also send up a rescission package to the Hill, and Congress can pass that, like reconciliation, with a 51-vote threshold. And so we're working through all of those options. And I think we ought to be trying to give the president and director of Office of Management and Budget, Russ Vogt, and others, as much power as we can within the confines of the Constitution to do that, because we want them carrying out executive power, at least up to some reasonable basis, to restrain bloated spending. But that's the power struggle. The final point is some of that is still to be litigated. Congress restricted impoundment in 1974 in the Impoundment Control Act, saying that, hey, we passed the law saying you can't do that, Mr. President. We believe that's unconstitutional. The president has executive authority to say, yeah, no, I don't have to go spend every one of those dollars because I can do it more effectively, right? Imagine a CEO or somebody in your company. You don't give them money, or you say you want to send your kid to a store to get food, and you go give them $300, say, I just want you to buy a meal for this weekend or, you know, for Friday, and they can come back with pizza for $20 or chicken and vegetables for, you know, $100, or they can get steak and wine and whatever and use the whole $300. They've got the authority. There's some executive, you know, decision-making. We want to empower someone to make the right decisions, and that's what this is all about. Hopefully that explains it for your listener.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good delineation of, you know, kind of where the strategy can be and kind of this multifaceted approach. And, you know, so then let's go back to the CR this week, because, you know, there was a lot of debate online, and I was really happy to see you, you know, to backing Representative Thomas Massey against, you know, all of the ridiculous insanity. No, he shouldn't be primaried. I mean, you know, I agree and tend to agree with you and the Freedom Caucus for why the CR was necessary for the six-month extension. But I get Representative Massey's point, and he's certainly not a rhino by any means. And I also get the overall point from the conservative voters and the MAGA base that it's like, okay, you know, we want to see real results. We don't just want to see some of these continuing resolutions that are basically funding the government at similar levels while saying, you know, we need to get a strategy in place. Because overall, I mean, why wasn't a strategy in place to actually reduce spending instead of needing a continuing resolution to get there? Is that just because of what is being elicited from DOGE and there's now like new information? Or, you know, what was really the necessity for the 6 months?
So, again, I'll try to break this down as simply as I can. And in no circumstance am I ever going to be like, oh, yay, let's come in and do a CR. That's the greatest thing, you know. No. What we should have done and did not do was focus on discretionary spending earlier this year, identified certain cuts that we knew we needed to put in place, and then add to them when DOGE was identifying some stuff, have them ready, pass it out of the House, send it to the Senate. If the Senate rejects it, because seven Democrats won't do it, right? Like, let's say we're defunding parts of USAID or restricting some funding on Planned Parenthood and how it's used or not, you know, whatever it might be, whatever we want to put in a bill. And Democrats jam us on that. Then we can make a decision about whether, if the president doesn't want to go into a shutdown because he wants to carry out certain activities, and we go, okay, strategically understand that, so then you default to a CR. At least you did your part of the job, right, in the House. We sent them, with majority Republican votes, spending cuts. Identify them, message them, because that moves the American people. We didn't do that, and we should have. But now fast forward. We're a week out, maybe 10 days out, and the government's funding is supposed to run out this Friday. Last week, we're talking about it. The president was very clear, look, I don't want to have a shutdown. I want to let Elon do what he's doing. I want Russ to be able to do what he's doing. We're doing a lot of reforms. I've got my cabinet in. They're just getting their feet on the ground. And that made sense to me. I mean, I'm just going to be honest, right? You've got Bobby Kennedy getting into HHS. They're all looking under the rock, seeing what's there. We don't want to slow that momentum. Let's allow them to continue to do their job. All right, so now the fall, what can we do? I then got on board with, okay, guys, if we will do a truly, you know, clean CR, by that, for me, I mean freeze spending within some degree of reason, and the ultimate bill we voted on actually reduced that spending $7 billion year over year from 2024 to 25. And then we actually got rid of earmarks, so there's no earmarks in the bill, which I think is good. We stopped the defense hawks from wanting to really increase spending by $30 billion for defense, which I want Pete Hegseth to present a plan to me before I agree to any defense numbers, and I want cuts on non-defense to offset it. And we weren't going to get those this week. It just wasn't going to happen. So for me, net negative, I'm going to drop spending $7 billion, basically a spending freeze, no earmarks, keep the lights on for DOGE. That makes sense to me. So that's what I was focused on. Now, Thomas, understandably, said, look, I don't vote for a CR. I'm not going to vote for a CR to fund USAID and fund these things I've opposed all these years. I get that point. Thomas shouldn't be being attacked for taking that position. It's the righteous position. Why don't we ever attack the squishes who want to keep spending money that we have to fight all the time? Now, again, I argued to Thomas, I argued to all my friends, hey, I think we ought to go down this road, and everybody but Thomas was on board yesterday. But Thomas is one of my best friends in the House. I'm going to defend him fully. If he gets a challenge, I'll be in Kentucky fighting for him. He shouldn't get a challenge because he's fighting from the right side. He's fighting to want to shrink government. He's fighting to actually deliver on the promises we made. And, you know, he's often, he's right more often than he's wrong. He's like, oh, he's a purist, and he just stamps his feet and says no. Look, he's up here saying, guys, every time you try to sell me one of these things, nothing ever changes. And he's right about that, right? So I'm giving the president basically runway here, and I was like, you know, we can do this. Another point, Democrats jammed us on our appropriations bills, right? We passed five appropriations bills last year. Democrats didn't do anything in the Senate. We weren't going to get any help out of the Senate on the appropriations process this cycle. So I don't think we had any choice. Now, for FY26, we have lots of choice. That means between now and the end of September, the House needs to move. We need to pass bills that cut spending, reduce waste, implement DOGE, send it to the Senate, and jam the Senate. And they better return something that's good, or we should fight them on it. That's my view. And so I think there's some real big fights brewing on FY26 and reconciliation.
And all of that, Representative Chipra, makes a lot of sense where Thomas Massey was coming from, where you were coming from. And I think that both of those positions are reasonable. And certainly both of those positions are conservative, truly. I mean, for him to be saying, you know, no, I don't want to support this for the reasons that you articulated. And for you saying, OK, I'm going to give the president some runway. That makes sense. But Massey's position isn't anti-Trump. And it's certainly not Rhino or Republican in name only. I mean, I feel like a lot of these, you know, kind of social media keyboard warriors use that to mean anything or anybody who ever disagrees with Donald Trump on anything. And Trump is not the standard of conservatism. Conservatism is actually objective here. It's not just, oh, we have to go along with whatever Trump wants because whatever he wants is automatically the best possible option. Yes, there is the Trump mandate, but this is a coalition and there still is the separation of powers. And that's why for all the leftists, you know, whining on The View, he's not actually a dictator. No president, thankfully, actually is. Like, he needs Congress's help. So I completely agree with you on that. And I hope that listeners understand why this attack against Massey is utterly preposterous. But moving forward then into the next 6 months, you've mentioned, you know, some of the things that need to be accomplished, especially with the DOJ reports and all of this. It's piqued my interest, especially as a taxpayer who hates the IRS. It's really piqued my interest to see that Trump is considering using a form of tariff or, you know, maybe sales tax, you know, plan some alternative to the income tax. I think the 16th Amendment was one of the worst decisions that America ever made for Americans. Where is Congress right now in the Republican coalition, Speaker Johnson and you, on some kind of reform or eliminating income tax altogether on the federal level?
Well, so remember, I couldn't agree with you more on the 16th Amendment, right? That has caused more harm to freedom in this country. Put aside just the dollars out of our pockets, just straight up freedom by empowering government with all this money, racking up debt and making us beholden to the, you know, printed money and then the bureaucrats spending money. Here's the tip. If you, right now, in order to get rid of the income tax, you have to amend the Constitution. That means we've got to pass it out of the House and the Senate with, you know, 67 votes in the Senate. That's going to be fairly significant, right? So what we're trying to do here is have, I think, a full-throated debate about whether you can transition our income stream, right? You know, the president referred to the, you know, Department of, External Revenue or whatever he called it. And I do think it merits having some consideration about whether we can, in fact, have a long-term sustainable revenue source from tariffs or other sources to replace how we handle income tax. You mentioned, of course, sales tax. Now, that'd be an internal national sales tax of some sort or some version of increased tariffs, which are in part a kind of version of a sales tax, right? Because, you know, if you're tariffing all goods, well, then you're applying that tariff, and then the price of those goods would go up based on the tariffs. And so everybody would be paying a little bit of a tax for that. Now, if we can generate enough revenue from all of that to radically offset income taxes, then that's an interesting thing that we should consider. But my concern is that in Washington, one, that becomes double taxation, right? We're going to keep the income taxes we've got, or they might go up or stay somewhat the same. And we're going to get the tariff impact on the price of goods, and we're going to get, you know, et cetera, because that's what we've always done. We pile on taxes. So I want to see the elimination of taxes if we're talking about the use of other taxes for long-term revenue sources. Now, if you're talking about tariffs for diplomacy, I fully support what the president's doing in trying to put pressure on Mexico and Canada and China for fentanyl, you know, on some of these countries and South America that refuse to take their illegal aliens back. We call them recalcitrant countries. And if the president's applying tariffs on a reciprocal basis to try to drive down foreign tariffs, I think that's a good diplomacy tool and using a strong hand for economic benefit. But if you get my follow, if you're following me here, what I'm saying is I think there's a lot of interest in overall tax reform, but we're in a tough environment to pass it, right? So you got to think through how you're leveraging. Okay, can we cut income taxes significantly if we're going to be ratcheting up any of the tariff side, demonstrate that we've got revenue coming in there, and then hope we can then work that to eliminate the income tax side? I think that would be a good and healthy transition for our country to consider, that and or a national sales tax approach, so that we can get out of this pernicious income tax. Hopefully that answered the question.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's something that, you know, really hopefully is being seriously considered at the federal level. I mean, I love living in the free state of Florida where we don't have a state income tax. And so there's and yet we still have a surplus budget. And I think that's possible at the federal level as well. But obviously, there has to be a massive reduction in spending and actually better stewardship of our resources at the federal level, which is the entire point of DOGE. And I think a huge part of the Trump mandate. And we're already almost out of time. Representative Chip Roy, my special guest today here on Demand. So so moving forward then into the next, you know, just two months of the administration and looking forward into the next, you know, 2 and 4 years, one of the things that I've been talking about regularly on the radio show side is this, as this momentum is growing and regular Americans are seeing the waste. I mean, like you said, we knew it was there, but we didn't have kind of these tangible metrics that we do now. And I think as even more comes out with DOGE, we're going to be increasingly appalled, rightly so. So I think that momentum can really gain speed heading into the midterms next year to get an even greater conservative majority and perhaps even in the Senate, a filibuster-proof majority, so that we could actually push through some things like, you know, the keeping men out of women's sports bill that was killed by the Democrats over in the Senate. That's insane. But just some of these other basic priorities on balancing the budget and codifying some of the executive orders and the initial wins of the Trump administration, where do you think we as conservatives need to prioritize for 2026 and the midterms?
I think, first of all, we have to deliver. Okay, that's the most important thing. On the two primary issues that the president made central to the America First agenda. And there are multiple issues, right? But first and foremost, obviously, securing the border of the United States, well, we're well on our way, but we've got to undo the damage of Biden, right? We've got to fulfill the removals and repatriations of these individuals who were released into our country, both endangering us and killing and crushing our social services. So we're partway there, but we got a long way to go. We need to pass some permanent reform, or at least try to. And then if Democrats block it, run on that. The second thing we've got to do is restore economic growth, get inflation down, the inflation tax that is crushing the American people, and make America affordable again. I think those are the two big things. Then I would call it, I'm just going to call it the common sense agenda. That's basically all the other stuff. And there's a bunch. But, you know, you referenced men and women's sports, you know, just having man and woman on your passport. You know, go down the list of things that we should not be funding. Like, for example, I think we were funding $2 million for in Guatemala. I think it was Guatemala, you know, LGBTQ services and sex changes. Like, what are we doing? Right? That's crazy. So there are things like that that we've got to end and, like, just, you know, restore common sense. I think we do those things. We stay on the side of the average American family affording to live, securing our border, securing our country, restoring common sense to our military, to our funding, to all of our programs. I think we can have an overwhelmingly successful midterm. But we got to deliver. And if we don't reduce spending in the reconciliation package, we're not going to get that inflation down. We're not going to change where things are going. We're not going to drive deficits and debt down. If we don't finish the job and allow for removals at the border, we're not going to finish that task. So, and it'll be hard for us to get a lot of those common sense things passed with Democrats blocking in the Senate. So we're going to have to pass them and then message them. So we got a lot of work to do. I think we've done a few of the first basic steps, but there's, you know, there's going to be now resistance even on the Republican side to finishing the job. So we got to deliver, and that's the secret sauce.
So well said. Well, Representative Chip Roy, so much more we could talk about, but we are already out of time for this episode of On Demand. Look forward to having you on again soon and also on the radio side where you're a frequent guest. I really appreciate all of the committed work that you are doing along with President Trump, the administration, and hopefully an increasingly conservative majority in Congress to make America great again and simply return government back to some of these common sense priorities. So we'll look forward to having these conversations as the administration runs along over the next 4 years. And you've been listening to On Demand with Jenna Ellis. This is our AFR exclusive podcast. And we can do these deep dives, and we always pick issues that are of concern and priority to you, to our listeners. And so if you have any questions or comments or thoughts on issues or guests, you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. And I will see you next week here on Demand.